and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 620.
The one without Green Lantern.
Yeah. It's this one really. Even though I thought for some reason, I thought I had an analogy or tie-in to Green Lantern, which on the top of my head is not there. And like, I can't think of what it was, but somehow I thought there was like a Green Lantern reference. Unless we talk about, again, I guess it makes no sense to talk about that figure again yet, because until it comes out, until we order it, we have nothing else to add that I didn't add the other day. But yeah, this one is not going to have any real Green Lantern. Green Lantern.
But oddly enough, we are talking about some Space Knights.
Yeah, that is true. We are talking about some interplanetary police, an army of good hunting down evil aliens and things like that. So that definitely helps.
But what's significant about this episode before we hop into the actual topic? Why did we make it special?
Besides being completely burned out from Green Lantern comic reviews.
And particularly pissed off about a recent. I'll be honest with you.
I was tempted to bring it up anyway. Feel free.
I was absolutely sick. But I may have exacerbated and just been like, you know what?
Not on the air. Don't exacerbate on the air, Jack.
No. I may have just been like, I was still feeling crappy, but was pretty confident I'd be okay by the time we would get around to recording. But after reading that issue, I was just like, you know what? I really don't feel like doing this right now. It pissed me off.
Yeah, spoiler alert, neither one of us is particularly fond of, we're less fond of Absolute Green Lantern than we were before this issue just came out. And so This is kind of like, you know, crap icing on a bad cake. So we will, at some point, we're going to review that issue, though probably not as quickly as we have been, because I think we're both, that issue does kind of pushes the boundaries, I think, of what we're willing to take as far as like the suspension of disbelief kind of stuff, the willingness to just overlook things that aren't working for you and are driving you nuts. And that issue kind of like had it dialed up to like 11. So
yeah, but you know, occasionally we like to do what we call this famous firsts, although mine's not necessarily a first for
no,
me.
No, see, whatever. No, that's why we struggled in this, our 450th.
Circling back to the reason.
Yes, I did not forget that. Circling back to the original question. The real reason, besides yes, needing a break, is that this marks the 450th anniversary. 450th anniversary. 450th episode. Screw me. It's the 450th episode since Chad and I took over with episode 170. So we kind of had been eyeing to do something a little slightly different. Again, not like unexplored territory or anything like that, but just something that is not tied to standard Green Lantern current issue reviews, because we've been doing so much of that for most of this year, actually, that we kind of needed a break. And if we weren't sure we needed a break, Absolute Green Lantern just kind of made it clear that, yeah, we made the right choice.
100%. So we're talking two issues of two different series tonight, but we're going to kick off with Mark's first. So what are we jumping into?
So I guess if there was a common theme here, it's superhero team-ups.
True.
Obscure, unique, non-common superhero team up. But yes, it is under the banner of Famous First. But we were, because it's me, I was desperately trying to get a real angle so it would make sense to how we could describe it. And but at the end of the day, probably because we didn't want to think about it all that much, and we didn't have all that much time to 100% think about it, because by the time we finalized everything, we just decided to pick two issue crossovers, team ups that we both kind of enjoyed. And we were going to delve into that. So my two, ROM 17 and ROM 18, which it's ROM and the Uncanny X-Men. So this is not ROM's first team up with anybody from the MCU, though it is the MU, but it is the first major team up when he's meeting A-tier characters. And this pretty much is the opening salvo and what happened following, where in short fashion, Rom ends up crossing over and meets a lot of mainstream Marvel characters. Power Man, Iron Fist, Fantastic Four. He continues to fight a lot of Hulk villains, building towards the inevitable confrontation that he has with the Hulk. Rom just becomes a much more mainstream character in the MCU, in the MU, excuse me, while there was a clear plan for the first year of his book, which you give credit for. They probably would never be able to do that or try to do that today. But they had a clear path to establish Rom and establish his mythology and things of that nature before having him cross over. So this is Rom teaming up with the Uncanny X-Men, the new X-Men, you know, the Wolverine, Colossus, Nightcrawler, Storm Team. And the important thing about this about the background for those who don't know this, and this is these are 1981 issues, which takes me back because I remember buying these suckers when they came out. So great creative team on this one too, because you got Bill Mantlo and Sal Buscema. Jim Shooter, editor-in-chief, Chris Claremont, consultant. I like that. Makes sense. Michael Higgins, letterer, Ben Sean, colorist, Joe Duffy, overall editor. Now, the thing to remember about Rom, for those who don't know what Rom's shtick was, that Rom was from the planet Galador, and they were about to be attacked by the shape-shifting evil aliens, the Dire Wraiths, who eventually we would find out are an offshoot of the Skrulls, which makes perfect sense. But in order to defend Galador, the best and the brightest of Galador chose willingly to become space knights, which basically were cyborgs. They were half still human, half cyborg, and their original parts were stored away. So when the war was over with, they could be restored. But they chose, after defeating the Dire Wraiths, they chose, instead of just returning back and saying, hey, we did what we needed to do, they decided their real purpose was to make sure nobody had to deal with this again and no other worlds had to suffer, as theirs almost did and others had already had. So they were dedicated themselves to going throughout the universe and wiping out all the Dire Wraiths. And that journey led Rom to Earth and West Virginia in particular, and that's where Rom's basically his base of operations and where he spent his first year plus. So that opens up, that's the background probably necessary for Rom. This issue called Hybrid, which is really pretty much if Rom has an arch villain, if he ever did really have an arch villain during this book, this kind of is the creation or the introduction of said villain. And we begin as cool. We begin the X-Mansion, where Cerebro is going batshit crazy, because he just detected a new mutant in West Virginia, a really powerful mutant. And Professor X sends the X-Men to go investigate to see whether basically this mutant is friend or foe. Meanwhile, in the same part of West Virginia where the alarm had been, Cerebro detected what was going on, we see a doctor going to the Jacob Marks residence to check on him and his wife. And when he walks in, he's noticing all the animals, all the livestock are dead at the farm. And he sees Marjorie, which is Mark's wife, and she's only like in her mid-30s or whatever it is, but she's aged horribly, and she's like a withered husk. And Jacob Marks is there, and he's talking to the doctor, and he says he by choice and also is weak, so he We find out he's a dire wraith, but he's a dire wraith that's been living as a human. We get a background about him. He basically crashed, I think, in 1940, and his ship was beyond repair, so were the communications. So he just decided to become, quote unquote, human and live a life as a human being. And he eventually found Marjorie, got married. And even though he didn't have children because he knew what he was and he didn't know how that would work, his wife really wanted to have children, and they did. And thus you have, his son. His son turns out to be the character that we know, well known as Hybrid, because he's a dire wraith human hybrid. And everything was fine for as we find out in this background, which he tells Rom, we find out that eventually the other dire wraiths came to Earth. They found Marks, and instantaneously they could tell who he was. And they really, really wanted his son because of the power of the human alien hybrid. So they used their dire wraith sorcery to awaken him and to brainwash him to where he didn't care anymore about the part of him that was human, and he was engaged and he was preparing for what his destiny was as a dire wraith. Rom, I'm trying to phrase this the best way, that this gets the whole thing about Marjorie and Jacob Marks gets brought to Rom's attention. He goes along with Brandy, who is kind of its eventual love interest, and Steve, who is currently Brandy's love interest, but Rom's friend too. They go to the Marks farm to find out what's going on. They find the withered husk again. She's alive, though, of Marjorie, and Steve and Brandy take her away to get medical attention. This is where, in the story, Jacob tells Rom everything I just told you about his background, because he's making it clear, you don't need to use your energy analyzer on me. I'm a dire wraith. I'm not making any pretenses. And he's actually, he's really afraid of his son. Rom goes in and confronts his son, who appears at first, he's to be in human form. But when Rom turns his energy analyzer, which will reveal if you are a dire wraith or not, when he shines it upon Jimmy Marks, I believe, then you see this really nicely drawn monstrosity that is the human wraith hybrid. And, Rom, he attacks Rom. They begin fighting. Rom attempts to use his neutralizer to banish a hybrid after he kills his father, which is kind of actually sad considering that he's a dire wraith. I mean, Rom even has a lot of empathy. That's one of the cool things about Rom, for someone who hates dire wraith so much. Even he has sympathy and understanding for Jacob, because he tried to actually, he became quote unquote human by living amongst them, that he had noticed, he wanted to forget all about whatever he was. He embraced being a human. But Rom's energy analyzer is unable to banish hybrid to limbo because of the fact that he is a hybrid, that he's not a pure wraith. So Rom's trying to figure out what he has to do. And it's like, well, I guess I have no choice. Even though I don't really believe in killing, I'm going to have to kill you. And as he says, I'm forced to slay you. Just then, the uncanny X-Men show up and Jimmy shifts back into human form and is playing up the, oh my God, this evil guy's trying to kill me. And that is where the first part of this ends. I'm assuming we want to do both parts before any comments.
Yeah.
Okay. So this leads us into issue 18, which I love that cover with them all fighting hybrid in the snow.
It's a really cool cover. It's really well done.
Yeah, it is. It's a cover that's because you kind of get the claustrophobic feel, which the issue does a really good job at giving you too. But as a cover, it does a really, really nice job capturing the not really. I mean, it's a spoiler, but as you would expect at some point, while the X-Men are there to confront Rom, thinking he's the evil mutant that they're looking for at the end of last issue, the cover makes it clear, hey, at some point they're going to realize that they're really on the same side. So the second issue is in a child shell deceive them. I'm trying to think if there's any notice of... I don't remember Giacola. I don't know if he was on inks in the last one. I think Milgram was, but either way, they're basically the same creative team. They pick up where they left off, and the X-Men confront Rom. They think, hybrid in human form is really playing up. Oh, we killed my mom and my dad. You have to protect me, and all these things. The first few pages really are just recaps of what happened last issue. The X-Men try to engage him. While this is going on, a blizzard starts occurring and Storm starts picking up right away that something's going on here, because number one, she didn't create it and she's having a hard time controlling it. So first she thinks maybe Rom is the one who's creating it because they still think he's the evil mutant. Wolverine gets a really good shot in on him with the claws, which does cause a lot of pain through Rom's circuit. Kitty Pryde is comforting Jimmy Marks hybrid at this point, as because he's manipulating all of this, because he's plan, you know, his plan is basically to try to have the X-Men kill Rom, and so he can basically get his dirty work done. You know, Colossus is squaring off with Rom. Rom kind of does get a sucker punch in on Colossus, but he needs to change the tide. At this point, Storm kind of picks up on the fact that a whole bunch of farm weapons and implements are being sent directly at Rom, you know, by someone. And Nightcrawler just gets Wolverine right out of the way, which we know I wouldn't have killed Wolverine. But the point is, he prevented Wolverine from getting hurt. And this is when Storm's putting the two and two together, because the fact that whoever's doing this wouldn't have given a rat's, you know what, if it actually killed an X-Men in the process. And as the storm continues to get worse and worse. At this point, Hybrid shifts back into his monster form, and Rom comes to try to, because he's hovering over Kitty, he can kind of see the shadow of Hybrid over Kitty. And Rom is reaching out to her, trying to talk to her, but she can't really hear what's going on. She sees Hybrid, she runs away. Rom reaches out to try to protect her, and she, involuntarily, by instinct, phases through him. And when she does, that gives him Rom, completely screws Rom up, makes him ridiculously nausea, gives him ridiculous nausea and probably vertigo. He's completely out of balance. And at this point, you know, Rom, even though he's in a weakened state, and he's trying to make sure he protects the girl, the X-Men now all come together, and they all end up figuring out, thanks to Kitty and everything else, that now they all realize that Rom's not the mutant that they have to worry about, and he's on their side. Rom tries to get his neutralizer again to take out Hybrid. Hybrid ends up knocking it out of his hands. Colossus sees Hybrid, he attacks him, but somehow Hybrid's able to change Colossus back into his human form, and he's struggling to breathe, in which Nightcrawler comes over and starts working on him to try to make sure he's okay. Wolverine does pick up the neutralizer and he tries to use it, but because it's kind of I think this was the tie into Green Lantern, because the neutralizer is kind of tied into Rom's genetic template to a certain extent, like Kyle's ring is, that because of the energy that comes from it, Wolverine tries to use it and he's not able to use it. And he gets fried, which probably would have killed almost anybody else, but for Wolverine, his adamantium skeleton pretty much absorbs everything else. Rom is going toe-to-toe physically with Hybrid, but Kitty, because of her phasing ability, somehow that enables her to be able to like mimic or echo the energy signatures. So she's still able to use it. And Rom tells her basically, or he's able to communicate with her to use it on the third setting, because there's three settings on the neutralizer, which is to banish, to kill, and Rom has to have it set for the middle one, which is to do both. And then Kitty turns the neutralizer on Hybrid while Rom is flying into him and holding him. And Hybrid is seemingly destroyed while Rom is sent shockingly to where all the dire wraiths he has ever dealt with, he has sent into the world of Limbo. Which set up a nice story, by the way, in issue 19. But that pretty much is the end of Rom 18.
Yeah. So why this one?
I always liked this one for multiple reasons. First of all, again, technically, I believe it was issue, because they reference it in this story. I believe it was issue 13 when he squared off with Jack of Hearts, who, of course, is like a C-tier Marvel character. But this is the first opening salvo and letting him go into a bit, you know, Rom walking through that door of the mainstream Marvel universe. I did like the fact also that it was cleverly done, because of the fact that technically he is a mutant hybrid. And that's the reason why Cerebro picked up on him. Professor X in the beginning of the first issue kind of mentions, can't really get a read on this. In fact, because I can't get a read on it, I can't even necessarily even tell you that it's human, that this mutant is human. So I like the fact that they tie it in cleverly with the new X-Men. And this is the time that, you know, the new X-Men were really starting to gain popularity too. And I was reading the X-Men. I came in pretty early on, not super early on. I came in right after Dark Phoenix, after they took care of Dark Phoenix. So I started reading X-Men with issue 138, which is a famous Cyclops walking away with a knapsack over his shoulder with the pink cover. So I was there for like the first issue, like issue 139, I think, is where they introduced the next issue, Wolverine's brown costume. So I was into the X-Men at the time. I was into Rom because I love Rom. I've said this before on the show. I love Rom as a character. And it just was, I thought it was a very, I thought it was a very cool story. Like we talked about, the art is really nice in this book. Buscema's art was really, really good. And I liked it was a good representation of who Rom was as a character too. The fact that ultimately, regardless of what happened to him, he was willing to do whatever it took, not just to protect Kitty in particular, but also to make sure the threat of hybrid was dealt with.
Yeah, I forgot about Kitty's code name, Sprite.
Yeah, that was the first. They went from Sprite to what, to Ariel and things like that. But yes, yeah, Sprite was they had, well, if I remember correctly, because I think that happened in 139 too. Professor X gave her the name Ariel, but she didn't want it at the time, and she said Sprite, and so for a while they just referred to her as Sprite. But obviously, at some point, I guess it became more Ariel again.
I thought it was interesting you picked this one, given your disdain of shapeshifters.
I don't like Durlans. But again, if you understand the generally you were correct, but the dire wraiths were done very, very well. And even though I think the book kind of does go off the rail as you get closer to issue 50, when I think issue 50 was with the Skrulls, that when they make it clear that basically they were two sides of the same coin, that the Skrulls are science based and the wraiths are sorcery based. That first and foremost, but yeah, I just but the, you know, but you can't, if you like Rom, you have to accept the shape shifting thing, because that was, you know, that was the main, you know, the villains there.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting how Hybrid applied his powers to tap into what Colossus uses in his brain to trigger the transformation.
Yes, because he is one quick overview. I didn't mention the fact that yeah, he's able to be he has telepathic or powers and things, so he's able to read people's minds. He knows what they're thinking. He knows what his father's thinking. He knows what his mother was thinking earlier on before he all the things. So yeah, so he's able to tap into and understand what they're thinking, which is one of the reasons why he figures he can manipulate the X-Men into basically doing the dirty work for him and taking out Rom.
Yeah, I was also trying to understand how Kitty kind of like absorbed maybe some of his abilities.
I think what I'm trying to go back to the actual line of what they say. It was something about incredible. The girl's electrical energy is the same which partially paralyzed me earlier, enabled her to wield my neutralizer. So it must have to do with the energies inside of her that regarding like her phasing, which I guess come from her phasing powers, also are enough to enable to make her be able to wield that weapon successfully, where like anybody else who just picks it up and tries to use it as a gun is gonna get fried like Logan did, but Kitty was able to do it for that reason. Is it a Deus Ex Machina explanation? Sure, but it is kind of cool.
Yeah, child, the neutralizer may be reset by electrical impulses such as those generated by my armor or by your own mutant powers. Yeah.
Plus, as Brom points out, as far as because why they have to play around with the setting, that the fact that it's just whatever setting that the killing beam or whatever that Brom points out, that either from when Wolverine used it or when she first tried to hit the trigger, that it changed the setting too, from what Brom had it on. So because Brom almost always used it as a banisher, as he pointed out, Brom's not a killer, despite the fact that everybody thinks that he is, in the dire wraiths, you know, using, you know, the media people, that they're making everybody believe, because all you see is this pile of ash after every time Brom banished somebody, so they assumed that he was just killing them and that's all of his left, when that's not what he was doing. So.
Yeah. I love reading old comics just because of the sheer amount of exposition. Like there's so many words on every page. But also like as the team walks off, our mission here is done, X-Men. We have encountered the mutant detected by Professor X. It was not, as we first mistakenly assumed, the armored being. It was instead Hybrid. We determined that he was evil and presided over his destruction. Let us return home. The recap of the events of the issue to the team who just experienced the events of the issue.
Well, I guess to be fair, I guess the reason why they do that is because in the beginning you get the recap of from Rom's recap. I would let Rom here. But yeah, you don't really get a recap in this particular issue of what led the X-Men here. So I guess they kind of balanced it out by the beginning of the book gives you Rom essentially giving you the happy recap of what happened to, from you know, from his perspective in the first half of the in the first part of the story. And at the end, you know, Storm is giving the happy recap of what brought the X-Men into the story.
So. Yeah. Only thing I have left, other than that, was, you know, good for a good first story for me in terms of I don't really read much ROM, so not something I have a whole lot of experience with, having been through you. But I assume that something happens with his neutralizer.
Oh yes, yeah.
Somebody finds it while he's in another dimension, and it probably becomes a plot point.
Not to drag this on much longer, clearly, but you did ask a question, so I have a legitimate reason to gab for a few seconds. If I remember correctly, what happens here is that, first of all, I know what happens in the next issue. Ironically, when he's in limbo, he finds his friend Karis, who was the Space Knight Firefall, who earlier in the book, the Wraiths had that armor, and they're trying to find a host for it, but it can't be a Wraith, because every time a Wraith gets into it by instinct, the living fire of Galador, which is what powers Firefall's armor, just kills it or banishes the Wraith immediately because it still functions on that base level. That it's not designed for a Wraith physiology to hook up to mesh with it. So they ended up having a human do it. But whatever happened to Karis was never answered. Where Karis, basically, when he was captured by the Dire Wraiths and they were this close to getting into the armor, he essentially banished himself to Limbo. So you get the Space Phantom? I think that's who it is. That you encounter these characters in the next issue. But I think Brandy and Steve, they do something with they're able to do something to tap into the energy of the neutralizer that opens up the port. The opening in which Rom's able to, I think that I could be wrong. I think they're trying to do that. I take that back. It's exact. They get the neutralizer. They bring it back home to what Clareton, and they're trying to play around with it, trying to figure out if there's a way to put energy into it to activate the opening. But it's actually Karis who is able to use the living fire, which is still merged into him. He's able to basically reverse the limbo banishment, and he returns Rom, which at the same time, like kind of we talked about the Ellie Rose thing going, here's another Green Lantern tie-in, the Ellie Rose thing running to Kelly going, oh, Kelly, you don't know what's going on, and then gets cut off. It's the same kind of thing, because Karis is fighting all these Dire Wraiths, and as he's returning Rom to Earth, it goes, they mention Galador, and it goes, Rom, Galador, but Galador is, and you don't find out, and you don't find really out what happens to Galador until like around issue 25, which kind of leads into the Galactus story, which is another one. If we ever do one, we should do the two-parter. I think it's a two-parter with Galactus and Rom, because it's really, really good. But I'm glad
another tie-in for Green Lantern. You said that the Dire Race basically accomplished with the Skrull. They're related to the Skrulls, but they do the Skrull. What the Skrulls do by science, they do by magic.
More by Alan sorcery. Versus yeah, the more core. By sorcery. Yeah.
Yep. Alan versus the core.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Tapping into willpower and green energy two different ways.
Yep. I also thought it was a pretty. It wasn't the best. I don't think it was a great character piece for Wolverine. I think it makes him more like a one-trick pony. But I think it was a pretty good character piece for Kitty. And to a lesser extent, Storm, but even though Storm, you give her credit for, because she's picking up on that something's rotten in the state of Denmark earlier than anybody else. But mostly that, I think, has to do with the weather, because the fact that she knows something's happening, it's not her, nor can she really control it. So there's something out of it. But, you know, Kitty's pretty heartbroken about the fact that she thinks that she killed Roman, of course.
I mean, also a good piece for Colossus there. Him caring for Kitty and worrying about her. So.
Yep. I mean, generally speaking, I was kind of, maybe I'm being a little nitpicky with Wolverine because I like Wolverine, and I don't think this is the best, you know, it doesn't show a lot of real depth to Wolverine, because Wolverine's just ready to, even in the first issue, like Wolverine's just, oh yeah, you find him and like, I'll knock him down, we knock him down, that kind of, but overall, it's a good reflection on what the new X-Men were as the team, you know, when Storm was leading them. So I thought, but that's another reason why I really like this story.
All right, what's next?
You tell us, Chad.
Yes, so this would be my choice for this. This is Captain America issues 305 and 306. This is, I think I'll probably get into it now. Another Modred the Mystic story. This is actually one I didn't read until maybe a couple of years ago, when I was just looking for more Modred stuff, because I kind of like, I know what happened to him, but I didn't necessarily have the issues. So after his initial appearances in Marvel Chillers, number one and number two, he didn't really appear that much. He showed up, as, you know, kind of like a wandering mystic type of guy in a Marvel 2-in-1 with the Thing at one point. And then he shows up in a 3-part story in the Avengers that's very popular called the Yesterday Quest. Something I've always wanted to do on this, but it's kind of hard because we usually stick to 2 issues and the Avengers Thing is a 3-issue arc. But suffice it to say, Chthon, or however you say his name, is the evil god entity behind the Darkhold. And because of, you know, no matter how good your intentions, if you mess with the Darkhold, you're screwed, you're tainted. Modred becomes that, cautionary tale. And in the Avengers Yesterday Quest, without getting too deep into it, it's a story primarily focused on Wanda and Pietro. And they go to Wundagor Mountain because Chthon is looking for, you know, a prophecy is out there, something about him one day returning in his perfect vessel or something of that ilk, which turned, you know, a child born in the shadow of Wundagor Mountain, where he is, you know, blocked from our existence or whatever, imprisoned, however you want to say it. And Wanda is that child. And by way of, you know, subterfuge and such, Modred is the individual that lures Wanda to Wundagor Mountain in the Yesterday Quest. Now, obviously, everything turns out right for Wanda and the Avengers and all that, but what it does
is that like 185,
something like that.
We could potentially do those one day. I do have those Wundagor things. So as you're describing it, and you're mentioning Wanda, and I knew that even this issue, I think it touches on some things related to
very Wundagor. Briefly, yeah.
Yeah, that it's like I do, because I remember that fit, like that really well-drawn cover, like with Pietro and Wanda, like I think like in the rain, like pointing or whatever. Like,
yeah.
So,
yeah, it's a very popular storyline, mostly because of obviously Wanda and Pietro and it being a big part of their origins and arcs and everything. But Modred plays a big role in it. At the end of that, while, you know, foes are vanquished and everything, something happens to Modred and he sort of regresses into this very infantile, childlike state, just a very innocent adult. We actually see him the next time we see him is after the Yesterday Quest, is in another appearance in 2-in-1 where it's a Christmas / Hanukkah story. They stumble across the childlike Modred, and he's a part of the story. But this is sort of important because it's Modred's return to sanity, sort of.
Well, he's sane. He's just not good.
So. This is sort of where we're at in Modred's history. So this is Captain America, as I said, issues 305 and 306. We have Mike Carlin as our writer, Paul Neary as our penciler, Dennis Jahnke as our inker, Diana Alberz as our letterer, Ken Fendunwitz is our colorist. Mark Grunewald is our editor, and Jim Shooter is our editor in chief. We open up with Kyle Rayner doing some illustration work. I always forget that Steve.
I know. I almost did too when I first saw it. And the Captain cleaning the plaque pixies is just fantastic.
Exactly. So yes, he's doing. And for those of you who forgot, it's been a while, but Captain America does illustration work as Steve Rogers, at least at one point.
Yeah, commercial artist.
Commercial artist, and he's working on something when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a uniform magically appears upon him and then disappears. He takes this as a sign that he needs to go to Europe because the costume resembled a sort of facsimile of the British flag in the same way that his uniform mimics the American flag. But he's going to go ahead and say, I got to check out, England to figure out, you know, what this is about. That's all he has to go on. So he's just going to hop on a plane and go to England. Meanwhile, and I won't touch on
this. Deadline, his personal deadlines be damned.
Yes, exactly. A very Kyle Rayner thing. Meanwhile, and this is the only time I'll really touch on this, because we get kind of a flashback moment here in both of these issues. But essentially, guys, Nomad is just doing his thing while Cap is off doing his own thing, taking care of, you know, people who are holding up convenience stores, stealing jewelry, that sort of a thing. I know Nomad's development goes on in future issues of this series and obviously publication, but in terms of what Nomad is doing, what is revealed about him, what is known about him in these two issues, the Nomad parts aren't really critical. It's just showing you that life goes on and somebody else is protecting New York right now. But anyways, Cap arrives in England, steps off to a bathroom to change into his outfit, hops a train to downtown until he can hop on a couple of buildings to get a good overhead look, because as he says, this looks like the perfect vantage point. If I don't see anything usual from up here, I'll just turn around and go home. So his whole plan was British flag appear on body, go to England, hop on big tall roof, scan the city for a minute, and if nothing weird happens, I'm going home.
Look at the time. Gotta go.
But something does happen, and he gets zapped and confronted by Captain Britain, who is wearing the very same uniform that he had on very briefly before everything went haywire. Although he doesn't think this is Captain Britain, because the last time he saw Captain Britain, it wasn't this uniform.
When was it? Where was it, Chad?
ROM 65,
which I can honestly tell you, I never read that issue, so I don't remember him ever meeting Captain Britain. But see, there's a tie-in. There's at least our connective tissue between our two stories.
I'm not going to get in. It's a lot of bravado. There's nothing really revealed here in their conversation, as we'll get to. This is not Captain Britain, it's just a bunch of posturing and stuff as the two fight each other and kind of fall through the sky. Bernie goes to check on Cap, meanwhile, back in England, the neighbor Jack or somebody close to him. I'm not honestly familiar with the supporting cast of Captain America at this time.
Well, that's got to be Nomad.
Oh, yeah, that's Nomad. That's Nomad. Yeah. And she's worried about Steve, and you know, he turns out left a note, gone to England. I wish all relationships could be like this. when they're worried about their hero boyfriend or significant other, and they're always just getting pissed that they just disappear. I like that. Oh, he left a note. He's gone to England. All right, cool.
Don't wait up. he could have left a sick, well, obviously it tells you, it dates it, because it's not a sticky note. He actually has a piece of tape. You would think putting a piece of tape on your artwork would not be a smart move anyway. But you would think he'd leave a second note, and by the way, could you please drop this off at my publishers.
So Cap and Captain Britain, as they fall through the sky, are fighting trading blows. Captain Britain finally gets the better of Cap, and he collapses under a little bit of rubble, which knocks him out. And minutes, hours, or days later, as the narration states, he wakes up in a literal dungeon, chained to the wall. And it's at this point that Captain Britain reveals himself to be Modred the Mystic. He talks about what I just went over about the events very briefly of the Avengers in the Yesterday Quest. Talks a bit about his origins, of course, for those of you who remember, because we actually did talk about it on a previous episode of when we talked about Marvel Chillers 1 and 2 in the Famous First series. He loves somebody. He was requested by Merlin to become his apprentice, but he wanted the power to defy Merlin so that he could be with his love. So he went to seek out the power of the Darkhold, which put him into a coma for decades. And he woke up, I think that was the 70s. He woke up in the 70s, discovered by archaeologists. But obviously, you know, as we learned throughout like the Yesterday Quest and things like that, the Darkhold had, you know, kind of wormed its way into his faculties, turning him into not basically a stooge of C'thon. So, but anyways, he is trying to get back at Merlin because Merlin is evil in the eyes of Modred, and he's going to, you know, take on Merlin's apprentice, who is Captain Britain. So he takes him on and takes his suit, but Captain Britain did something to make this, to try and summon Cap, which is what happened when the suit suddenly appeared for a moment on Cap. It was supposed to stay with him, but Modred did his thing to summon the suit back to him. He knew Cap would be coming, and that's why he confronted him. So we hop then into 306, where Modred is going crazy on London, taking down landmarks, making explosions absolutely everywhere, to piss off Merlin to get him to show his face. That's basically everything that's going on for this first part of this issue. All the while, underground, Cap is trying to free himself, and there's another situation, a guy named Arnie that shows up to talk to Bernie back in New York. It doesn't really matter here, so I'll just skip over that part. To longtime Cap fans, this may be an important part. I do apologize. But anyways, Captain Britain comes to, and the two...
in his underwear. He's in his underwear, and I'm throwing all of this. He's tiny whities.
Comes to and helps Cap and them escape. We flash back to Nomad again. Cap finds a shield, and the two go to the surface to start taking on Captain Britain, Modred the Mystic. This is when, you know, he's like, you know, if you want to talk to Merlin, the only one thing that's going to do it, I have to summon him. I have to be wearing the suit in order to do that. This is why I say Modred is maybe not really gained all of his mental faculties back, because he does it. He gives Captain Britain back his suit, but he's true to his word regardless, and does a spell to try and summon Merlin. We see the sky change, but nothing happens. This all of mankind shall now pay for your deceit, says Modred, and starts attacking people. Then goes towards the Tower of London to blast a graveyard to bring, reanimate some corpses from the cemetery to distract and take on Cap and Captain Britain, while he does his thing and makes some more problems and destruction. He tries to take them both on, but they sort of, they sort of cross the stream slash push it back on him and attack him from both sides, which knocks him out. And then all of a sudden, this is when Merlin decides to reveal himself.
Better late than ever.
You did all the heavy lifting. I'll take over him, and I'll remove this evildoer and figure out what to do with him. This is when Cap says, well, he needs to stand trial and so on and so forth. Well, and Merlin's like, fuck you. and they stare off into a now clearing sky with a nice the end carved into the tree behind them.
The end, indeed. Here's a fun fact about this. When you told me this was the one you wanted to do, and you said Captain Britain, which was 100% correct, you said Captain Britain, but in my mind's eye, I'm thinking Union Jack, which is even funnier because they reference that story that I was thinking of in particular when they with Union Jack and his sister dealing with Baron Blood. And the reason why I think of Union Jack instantaneously is because I did read The Invaders when I was a kid. So I think of Captain America teaming up with Union Spitfire. That was the sister. That teaming up with that all those World War II characters, and Baron Blood's because he's a vampire, is the character that's was the villain then and is the villain now. But the irony is the fact that they reference that story, the 253, 254, or whatever it was. They reference that. When he talks about, the last time I was in England was blah 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 blah, and that's the two issue arc that dealt with Union Jack and Baron Blood. So I thought there was more than a little irony to the fact. It's like as soon as I saw the cover, it's like, oh yes, he did say Captain Britain. So which is fine, but I'm thinking Union Jack, and then I'm reading the first issue, it's like, oh, at least I get my Union Jack fixed by talking about the issues, referring to the numbers.
Yeah. For sure. I just like this story because, if your only experience for the longest time with Madre the Mystic was Marvel Chillers 1 and 2, like it was for me. And remember, I just had issue 1 for the longest time. I didn't even get a chance to read issue 2 until, God, years later. But he's just a good man who was forced through what he thought was the only option available to him to take a bad path to achieve something noble or whatever, being with his love and committing and all of this stuff, his views of Merlin or whatever, or being skewed or whatever, notwithstanding. I just think that it's interesting when you read Modred's appearances is all he is now as a character. He's not even really a top tier villain. And I guess his biggest appearance would be throughout the Darkhold series in the 90s when they were doing that whole thing. But even then, you couldn't really call Modred a major player, even if you were just specifically focusing in on the 90s. So I just think that all he does is serve as an extra piece of the story of the Darkhold. He's a living cautionary tale against using the Darkhold for any means whatsoever. But I also think because they've been sort of just keeping him in that lane and only that lane forever, I just think there's this opportunity out there for people, some writer to come along and redeem Modred. Because I don't know that at this point you need a cautionary tale for the Darkhold. I think everything about Chthon and just the Darkhold in general is already established enough without having this added piece of the living example of the cautionary tale. So I think it would be crazy, if somebody could just come along and redeem Modred, because I think I don't want to talk about whether or not Anakin was redeemed or not, but I think a redemption story could actually work for Modred and make it believable. I think having another good sorcerer out there would be cool. That's why I just keep folk coming back to Modred and him appearing in this random moment. It just seems like Marvel used to want to do something with him, but never quite followed it through because they put him in the Yesterday Quest and then they threw him in Marvel 2 and 1, and he appeared in a couple of issues of Doctor Strange, and he appears in Cap, and it's just like it feels that his design is great. It's attached to Arthurian lore. It's not a US based thing like so many heroes. He's something from overseas. I don't know. There's There's so much here with Modred, and I don't think he's like, you know, an A-tier character or anything. I'm not trying to say that he belongs in the limelight, but I just feel like as a character, this era that we find ourselves in with the Yesterday Quest and all this stuff that we just talked about, that we were going somewhere with Modred that we never quite did.
No, I mean, this is why, in a way, I was surprised with you picking the story, just because he clearly is more, I can't even say he's Parallaxian. He's really not really Parallaxian, because he doesn't really, the Anakin, because it's funny, I almost said that while you were doing the review. The Anakin analogy is dead on from the perspective of some, it's like from Sith. From my point of view, the Jedi are evil. It's like, as you schmuck. But he's not really Parallaxian, because he's not really trying to accomplish anything great or good, or he's not really like seeing the world from a different perspective, really. He's just kind of warped at this point, because he tapped into something he shouldn't have tapped into. But in a way, it surprised me that you did pick the story when he is more, he's definitely more of a bad guy than he was, you know, in some of the other things that we've discussed and we've looked at. But
and that's just it. That's what's interesting about him, is if, you know, because my perspective of anybody else's perspective of Modred, I totally allow for the fact that some people might have just experienced him with his origin, because it's Marvel Chiller's number one. It's a number one. So it probably sold a lot of copies, because that's as true then it is as it is now. Number ones just sell a lot. But him to, because I'm telling you, it was Marvel Chiller's 1 and 2, and then Marvel 2 and 1, like 33 or something like that. Maybe one other appearance, and then bam, Yesterday Quest. So I can see people's first experience with him being something more like 2 and 1, because 2 and 1 by then was already established. Lots of people like just following along the thing for adventures. And then you mentioned you had the issues of the Yesterday Quest stuff. So that was a big deal. So I could see other people's perspective of Modred. He's always been the bad guy. He's always been the villain. But for me, in my very unique experience with it, was, you know, those I always mention it, so I won't list all 5 or 6 of them. But those, that group of 5 or 6 issues that I had as a kid, until I actually got into comics by the time Final Crisis: Rage of the Red Lanterns came out, I had only ever read Marvel Chiller's number one over and over and over again. So I was staunchly rooted in understanding Modred as just a guy that tapped into something he shouldn't have, but with noble purposes, and was trying to do the right thing, awakened in the modern era. So to see him go down that route was initially disappointing for me, but the back and forth, like him going to that childlike state as a result of what happened in the Yesterday Quest, and, you know, kind of seeing those moments with him appear, and then he would just revert back. And then I haven't read it all, but I know that in the Darkhold series, for a little bit, you think he's on the side of kind of trying to contain the Darkhold and everything, but he just turns out to be another vessel for Chthon yet again. So like, you keep getting these glimpses of the man he used to be, whether he's pretending or not or whatever. So I've actually come to embrace his evil side a little bit, because it makes him a complex character. There's a lot of complexity in a character that Marvel seems to never touch.
Yeah, I mean, when you describe it that way, yeah, okay. So there is a Parallaxian element in there. Maybe not in this story, but yes. But yeah, I get it. There are layers there. It's the Shrek onion thing. There are layers there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I see. I do. That is very, very true.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make a TED talk out of this. That's about all I've got. That's about all I've got for this. I just, as much as I love the Modred stuff of this, the Cap stuff of this makes me just, you know, it's not bad. Don't get me wrong. This is classic storytelling, and this is classic Marvel in this era, so on and so forth. I think this is everything that was, you know, going right with Marvel at this time in this regime. But I just don't care about Cap stories for the most part back in the day. There's some more modern Cap stories I enjoy. The current Captain America run is actually really good. I've been picking that up. It's like 4 or 5 issues in right now. But I don't have much of a desire to read older Cap. And this doesn't do anything to make me want to go back and read and figure out what was happening with Nomad or Arnie or any of this other stuff.
And to me, it's hard because, you know, Nomad to me is still Cap because that's how it started. I had that issue too. I had the issue, which is kind of, it's still surprising that when you see Nomad that he still has the cape. So maybe it's a little shorter because Steve Rogers trips over the cape the first time he's out fighting crime. When he goes, this is why they didn't give me a cape. This is why I never had a cape in my Captain America suit. And he just rips the cape off. But actually the Baron Blood story, the Union Jack Baron Blood thing was pretty cool. Well, that was a good story, but again, it may not have as much of an appeal to you because of the fact that it was, like I said, my time. It resonates with me because of the Invaders, because of knowing those characters, who obviously they have aged, while Steve hasn't. But those characters are, you know, Union Jack and Spitfire, you know, with Namor and Toro and, you know, the original Human Torch, all those guys that, because I did read, not like religiously, but I do have a bunch of Invaders issues and things like that. And I was reading the book when it ended. I remember like when the book got canceled, they combined like the final 3 or 4 issues into one like 60 page book or something like that, just to try to be, just to wrap the story up, to give it a conclusion. That I remember that because Baron Blood was actually in that too, because of the whatever the hell that the Axis group that they were fighting was named. But it is kind of cool. I like, because I think that's the issue where Baron Blood, like, he hypnotizes Steve and like he's about to turn him or tries to turn him, but of course he ends up like, for almost, if he doesn't break his fangs, he comes close because he goes to bite him on the neck and he bites it, goes right into the chainmail or his armor. So, but it was a good story. I read Captain America somewhere from, I think, like from the 180s. Not religiously with that either. But I have a lot of Captain America books somewhere like in the 170s going on and off through like maybe the 250s. So. And that was one. So that, it was kind of funny that they referenced that story. So it's like, oh, at least again, the tremor and the force thing. At least there was a reason why. Maybe it's like I was thinking Union Jack, even though that's not who was in the story.
Yeah. All right. Anything else about either Rom or the Cap issues we talked about tonight?
That was a good. It was a good story. I'm glad you picked that one. It was enjoyable to have some references to, again, different story. Even the Nomad stuff, like I said, to me, it's weird seeing someone else be Nomad, even though I know logically, continuity-wise, other people took over being Nomad after Steve went back to being Cap. But I enjoyed that story. It was nice going back and rereading Rom 17 and 18, which I hadn't really done in a while. There are several good storylines. In fact, even down the road, if there was a justification, the second time Hybrid rears his ugly head, which is again a nice bookend, because it's not the X-Men that Rom has to deal with, and when it comes to Hybrid, it's like the quote-unquote Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, but it's more like the Sisterhood of Evil Mutants, because this is with Mystique and it's with Rogue, and it's I think it technically is a brotherhood too, because I think Pyro is part of it, and so is Avalanche and things like that. But Magneto is not involved. That's the reason why I kind of said what I said. But was it Destiny? Was that the one that could read? The one that was psychic? But either way, it's another cool storyline, because that one is relevant also because it's one of the furthers the dropping of the, or the laying of the breadcrumbs that leads Rogue to becoming an X-Man. Which, of course, now everybody just thinks of Rogue as being part of the X-Men, not realizing many people that she was on the opposite side. to start with. Kind of like how Vision was teamed up with Ultron before he switched sides and things like that. But this was one of those storylines where seeing things up close and seeing Hybrid and seeing Rom's nobility and things like that. That's an important story in pushing Rogue towards her eventual turn to the X-Men.
Yeah. 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 I think I was playing around with doing like some Firestar stuff, but I honestly did read some of the Firestar stuff, and it's real steeped in the goings on of X-Men at the time. Her first appearance, her first in continuity appearance.
Yeah, which absolutely makes sense, because obviously they made sure they did that even in the animated show to tie her into the X-Men and some.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man and his amazing friends, they made sure to tie Firestar to the X-Men.
Well, yeah, they did the whole thing where they introduced Firestar in that X-Men issue, and then they had that Firestar miniseries, which took you back. So like she kind of came in as this established character, as sort of like you. The way in which it read as if she, you know, I won't dive deep into it right now, obviously, but like it read as if she had always been there. And then they gave us the 4-issue miniseries or whatever that backtracked and told you what her origin actually is, which was complete, you know, published, you know, in its own miniseries and wasn't like a, you know, a story arc in the actual Uncanny X-Men. It was connected to a lot of crap going on with Emma Frost and all that crap at the time. So I just I am not versed on X-Men very much, and you were already doing an X-Men story with Rom, so I was like, I not getting into the weeds, let's do Modred. And I was gonna pick Yesterday Quest, but I was like, oh, it's 3 issues, so I thought this one was pretty nice, pretty concise.
Well, if we're going to do that, it's like, again, I think the issue for us is finding the digitals of these issues.
Oh,
like
yeah.
You didn't let me finish.
Oh.
That, none of that, but we have talked about multiple times doing that 4 or 5 part Marvel team up story. I think it was 4 parts. In which it relates to the Salem witch trials and the villain and this stuff, because it's a really cool story, because it's like, I think it starts off, I think, with Spider-Man and Wanda, and then the Vision comes in, but Wanda's still in the story, so it's not like it's a one-off, one character leaves and one character replaces them. It's like, no, then another character joins. So Vision's in the second part, and then I think Doctor Doom comes into the third part, so they're there. And I think Moondragon might be the final part. Might be the final one, but it's a really, really cool, because that's something they didn't do that often with Marvel team up. Plus, it's a really, really cool story, and just because, again, you're not used to that. Plus, if the characters you're having interact, maybe Moondragon might be a B-minus tier character, but you have Spider-Man, you have Wanda, you have Vision, you have Doctor Doom, all pretty much teaming up, trying to deal with this threat together. That it's a really cool story, but that's been something that we've been looking for, and we can't quite find the digitals, which is more of a problem, I think, for Chad. I believe I physically have them. So if we ever decide to really do something like that, if we wanted to do your three issue thing and do this for me, then I guess I could scan them in if I had to. It would just obviously take time, but we could do it. And then, it's a possibility, let's put it this way, based on the fact that we've talked that there are certainly longer stories than just two issues that would be worth exploring with some really, really cool characters.
For sure. All right. Anything else we want to talk about?
I don't think so.
I did listen to your episode, but I didn't. If I have anything to say about sales, it's probably about Absolute Green Lantern, which is... We'll have our own episode.
Yeah,
about,
so. Yeah, that would actually be a good place to talk more about it. Though I would say I was honestly a little surprised that rebounded as quickly as it did after the other one dropped. I guess the analysis of what Comic Book Revolution was accurate on that one. The fact that they said that they kind of figured for whatever reason that was the aberration. And I guess the sales did point out that it was, but yeah. And you know I was teasing you about that, but it's just the truth. When we talk about it, it's usually just it's just most of the talk is just comparing from what last issue did and what this issue did, or if there's a trend. So in a big picture, it didn't. We know the regular Green Lantern books are not selling well. That's based on those numbers. So it's not really a surprise. but yeah.
As we record this, we're away from we're only a day or two away from the drop of the Walmart figure.
Yep.
But as you hear this, it'll already have been done. So somewhere in between, hopefully one of us or both of us achieved our goal of grabbing that figure. So
yeah, it will be interesting to see how available it is, how the demand is, especially because it's not the only exclusive figure they have.
Yeah.
So on one level, that makes it easier because not everybody's going there for one figure, but it also might increase the traffic, because even if they're not going for that figure. And let's see. You'd like to think Walmart would be able to handle it, because obviously Walmart has to handle Black Friday sales online and different promotions. So we'll see. I'm hoping, I mean, one way or the other, I'm getting that sucker. That's definitely going to be an eBay job if I have to go to eBay and get it for do a buy it now. You know, if I miss out on the $30 set it or whatever that it is, and there's like a buy it now for like $40 on eBay, I'll probably just go there that day and buy it, and not going to screw around with it because of the fact that this is one I definitely want for multiple reasons. So yeah, that's going to be one that you're going to have to track down, just like the Parallax Funko Pop. If we weren't lucky enough to be able to, if Jim wasn't able to take one for the team, so we could use the stupid ass way they make you pay for stuff on the drop and the drop marketplace, instead of just being able to pay for it, but like with a credit card, like you should be able to, that if we were not able to acquire them the way we did, certainly that was going to be an eBay job where no matter what, I was coming home with a few of those.
All right. Well, if people want to reach out to us and let us know if they got that figure, what
LanternCast@gmail.com. The website is LanternCast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook. Use hashtag Geocast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
All right, everybody. Good night.
Good night.